another episode of the Regenerative Health Podcast. This is a special episode, and it's an in-person episode live from El Salvador, the Central American Republic. Now, I'm here for a very special event that is being held called The Age of Light, hosted by Dr. Jack Cruz. And this is all about decentralized medicine and light as medicine. So as part of the events, I've had the special opportunity of sitting down in person with Anjan Katta and Tristan Scott, who are both part of a project called the Daylight Computer Company. So this is something that I've recently become aware of that is attempting to solve a very, very important problem, which is light, specifically artificial light being emitted from devices and the effect that that is having on our biology and our circadian biology. So, Anjan, Tristan, thank you for making the time to have a chat to me today.
Thanks for having us.
So what is the problem that the Daylight Computer is trying to solve?
I think it starts with my feeling that the relationship we often have with technology is toxic. And there's so many ways that it impacts us negatively. You know, it's addicting, it's distracting, it hurts your eyes, keeps you inside. You can't see it in the sun. But one of the cornerstones of it was just realizing of all the facets of health, one of the ones that's most foundational and pivotal is light. And if you really think about what a computer is, it's a maze of electrons moving around to change light, how light shines onto you. So it's easy to get lost. A computer is Moore's law and a CPU. Oh, a computer is a mouse and a keyboard. But actually, at its essence, a computer is a way of changing how light shines on you. And to me, any rethinking of the computer then needs to start there. And the fact that a computer is shining blue light on you just tells me at its core, it's foundationally corrupt. And so if we talk about the future of computing, to me, you can't get started unless you start with the fundamentals. And that to me is light, it's ergonomics, it's EMF, it's sovereignty, and I could go on and on about what that is. But that was the goal. If you work backwards from the science of light, how could a computer look different?
Yeah, and look, a lot of my listeners will know, and I've talked about the effect of harmful blue light on our health, and these displays, these OLED displays that we have in iPhones, in computer screens, are such a major contributor in my mind to circadian disruption that people are getting, even unwittingly, from perhaps checking their phone first thing in the morning, checking, scrolling on their phone last thing at night. Most people have no idea how detrimental that is to the circadian signals that their body is receiving. So, and maybe you give us an overview of how a conventional display works. How does a normal iPhone display work? And maybe how is your engineered design changing that display?
Sure. You can think of a conventional display as a sandwich that creates silhouettes with a flashlight behind it. And so every time you're looking at a computer, you're looking at a flashlight. And if the sandwich did nothing, it would just be a white rectangle. And when you block the whole thing, you make the entire thing a black silhouette, that's when you get black. And then each pixel, you can choose to make it black or white or some layer in between, some light gray or dark gray. That's how a normal kind of computer display works. And it's got a little layer of color. And so for a specific pixel, it's got three colors. And if you make that red completely white, you don't block it at all, but you block the green and you block the blue, that specific square on the display will look red. You block a little bit of the blue, you block a little bit of the green, you know, you get an orange or you get purple or you get da-da-da-da-da. And that's called an emissive display because it's like a flashlight. It's emitting in your face. So what we're doing instead is kind of the opposite, where instead of us emitting light, what we're doing is we're reflecting light, we're bouncing light. So any object in our environment, if it's not a firefly or a fire or a star, it's not emitting light. It's bouncing the light that's coming from the sun. And so the principle of our thing is our sandwich, instead of emitting light, whatever light is coming from your ambient environment goes through the display and then bounces out. And then we put a black silhouette where you want it to be black, and we keep it white where it needs to come through. So it's kind of like a piece of paper. A piece of paper is bouncing the light, and the black is the areas where the light's getting absorbed. And so we're essentially replicating the physics of a piece of paper, but now the ink can move. That's kind of what it is. It looks like a tablet, but the ultimate form factor of this paper-like reflective displays is you get something like the newspaper in Harry Potter, where it's like a piece of paper where the ink happens to move. And guess what? That's a computer. A computer is the ability to animate a surface or animate something, changing your relationship to light and the object.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, people might be familiar with a Kindle. Like, that's their kind of frame of reference of maybe of a electronic device that doesn't have a massive blue light emission. So how is what you're developing with the blue light computer, how is that different or similar to a Kindle?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say in many ways, this project started out as a love letter to the Kindle. It felt like of all my computers and all my relationships with computing, my Kindle was the one that felt calmest, that felt most respectful of my attention, that felt most like it worked in my environment on my terms. And if you don't use the backlight, it doesn't have blue light. You can use it in the sun. Holy crap, it checks all the boxes. But then I tried to Kindleify more of my life, and then you run into the intrinsic limitations of the technology. There's kind of two limitations, with the biggest one being the refresh rate is enormously slow. And what that means is if you want to read Harry Potter and once a minute you're turning the page, it's totally fine. But you're trying to scroll through a Google Doc, you're trying to type, you're trying to search. So much of modern computing depends on high refresh rate for zooming, scrolling, panning, typing. And so you can't actually use it for general purpose computing. And that's why they're in the category of e-readers or e-notes. So I feel like our hypothesis was if you could solve the fast refresh rate, and then you could solve all the waveform and firmware stuff, that's kind of the software stuff in the background that makes it very difficult, you could create the world's first blue light free computer by making high refresh rate e-ink. And I thought it'd be done faster. It's almost now 6 years since we started, but that's what we have here.
Yeah. So. Epic. And maybe it's a good opportunity to ask you, Tristan, about the addictive effect of blue light. And, you know, I come back to what Dr. Jack Cruz has said a couple of times, which was the invention of isolated blue light was in part or related to basically the mafia's discovery that if they put people inside in front of blue light emitting pokey machines without access to natural light, then they could, take their money without holding a gun to their face. So what is your perspective on the specific addictive nature of isolated blue light as it relates to our addiction? Because it's our collective addiction to these blue lit devices.
Yeah, that's a great point. And something I've been thinking a lot about just, you know, trying to market the daylight computer, because it really is such a problem. And before even getting into the science, you can see it, especially in children. Just like, you know, I was looking up videos of, you know, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, what happens when they have an iPad and then you take it away from them. It's, you know, the most traumatic experience they could ever, you know, have. And that's the relationship with technology. And then you see all these mental health issues, right? Like suicide rates are through the roof for teenagers because of this. And I think it comes down to a few things. I think it comes down to the combination that our society is so low dopamine from these screens, which directly blue light and isolation can lower dopamine. And when it's not being balanced with, you know, the full broad spectrum of sunlight. And then it's coming with, you know, other effects, right? Like all lighting that's artificial is pulsed in nature. It's not continuous. So it's alien in multiple ways. But then also you're getting the circadian disruption piece of it. So they're more susceptible, right? Because they are not optimal from a health perspective. So they have that circadian disruption from the isolated blue light. And then they're getting the dopamine lowering effect. So I think it's just making everyone so susceptible. And by that case, they're just addicted because they have no real fulfillment. in their life, and then they're just going back to the screen for more, for that quick dopamine on social media, when in reality, that's causing their low dopamine and their circadian disruption, which is ruining their health. So from a foundational level, indirectly, and then also directly affecting the neurotransmitters, it's a real shame.
It is. And mechanistically, we have a synapse of these intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells that recognize blue light, and they're synapsing at this habenular nucleus, which is directly influencing mood. What you said reminds me of a clinical case that I had, and that was a non-verbally autistic child. And he was brought into my clinic room, and we were dealing with a different issue. But this child couldn't speak, but when his mother gave him this iPhone, it was an iPad. The speed at which, and the ability at which this kid was able to navigate the YouTube algorithm. I think he was double tapping and maybe listening to about 3 seconds of a video and then double tapping. And I was immediately blown away with how this kid was able to use this technology, but obviously was not able to do basic human communication skills. And I think blue light toxicity has a pretty deep pathophysiological role in development of autism. So I think that really just gives us an idea of how big the problem is that you guys are tackling with the daylight computer, and I think how important this kind of work is. So I guess people might be interested in understanding. So you've developed a new display. It's similar to Kindle, but better. Am I able to watch a movie? Am I able to do all the things that I would normally do on a laptop or a computer on your type of device?
Yeah, I'd be happy also afterwards to provide some sort of demo so people can see. I'm using it right now as a notepad. Basically, you can think about it. Whatever you can do on an iPad, if the screen was black and white, you can do here. So movies, GIFs, animations, you want to do Khan Academy, you want to do Google Docs, you want to do ChatGPT, you want to do Telegram. Anything you can kind of do on a tablet, you can do. And our goal over time is to make every computing category with our specific take on what leads to health and wellness and focus and mindfulness and sovereignty.
Yeah, okay, cool. So maybe show us what you've got right now. Basically it's a device that you've written on using a stylo. And yeah, there's a fair bit of ambient light in the room where we are now. Yeah. But
it's pretty anti-glare in real life. It's a little hard on camera sometimes. But let me see if I can throw up a video here for you people.
For those listening on the podcast feed, it's a very, very sensitive display. So it looks, the response of the display is not in any way like a Kindle by any means. It is just as responsive as an iPad.
It's
but
60 to 100.
Okay, 120 times.
60 to 120 times faster than the Kindle in terms of refresh rate.
Yeah. So the display isn't colorful. I mean, that is one obvious, just looking at it real life. So we are lacking color. So are you able to have any degree of color, or is that inherent in the design?
We have a color prototype. It's just going to take us some time to get that into production.
Yeah.
It's tremendously hard. So you can see here, this is our best attempt at trying to replicate, you know, moving ink on paper. This is a video playing at 60 FPS.
So it's like a grace. This is the first design or iteration or
your prototype. First product, yeah.
So it is. We are lacking color, but it is basically like watching a normal iPad, but with a kind of grayscale.
Right.
Yeah.
And we think color is going to be useful in serving more people and more applications. But I think we've been surprised for how many people the lack of color is not a bug. It's a feature.
Interesting.
There's something about it just feeling calmer, feels more minimalistic, feels different. It's almost like it puts you in a particular headspace. Like we're used to color, and it's almost like our nervous system clenches a bit. You know, it's overstimulating. It's oversaturated. Imagine putting an Apple Vision Pro on. I mean, you're just getting bombarded. There's something about how black and white makes this boring. It's just like your head isn't in a place of high stimulation.
Yeah.
So writing that homework assignment you have to do, reading that thing that's important but is a little bit hard to do, just gets a little bit easier. Yeah. So that's been interesting. The psychology of having a more boring computer can sometimes be in your service.
Well, that immediately makes me think of the use of red in these applications and in devices. And there's a reason why the app has a little red notification when you get a new message or you get someone sends you a DM. I think that is targeting a very, very old and evolutionarily conserved pathway of, you know, alert, danger, kind of with red. So it makes complete sense to me that if you're having a more calm grayscale display, that you're not kind of hijacking that pathway that most people are experiencing on a daily basis.
Said better than I can. And I talk about it with the team that even in the design of our software, the key prompt is how can we use color responsibly, not to manipulate or take advantage of a user, but use it in places where it's actually helpful to you. And I think that using color responsibly and not manipulatively is actually a huge design challenge because it's going against the best practices of UI UX for now decades.
Yeah, and we have the optionality with the backlight and the amber LEDs in there to change the warmth and change the amount of backlight LEDs. So we do have some LEDs in there. But what's really cool is that, you know, it's very heavy in the red spectrum. And then it's also DC. So I said this, I think, briefly talking about blue light. All LEDs, all lighting, pretty much all RFs, they're pulsed. They're controlled with pulse width modulation, which is an inherent issue because sunlight is continuous and it's broad spectrum and it's typically unpolarized, whereas all of our light and radio frequencies, they're highly pulsed. So they're not, what that means is they're not on continuously. They're just like on, off. There's a duty cycle percentage of how fast they're on. It's typically in the thousands of cycles per second range. So you can't see it. So that's really a major factor in eye strain is, and you can, if you ever taken a video or a picture of a screen with your phone, you see that. And, you know, eye strain to me, just after realizing this, is probably the most pervasive health issue, like worldwide. Like everybody who uses screens has some form of eye strain because it's such an unnatural light being, you know, emitted. And that's like the most sensitive, you know, debatably most important area or one of the most important areas of our biology. So what Anja did that's incredible is it seems like a simple fix from an engineering perspective. Oh, just change the lighting control of the LED from PWM pulsed to DC direct current on all the time. But it was actually quite a hurdle, but we got it done. So maybe he can talk about that a little. It's pretty cool.
And just to give a little bit of context, I was explaining how a normal display is emissive. It's like a flashlight in your face. And our thing is like a piece of paper. It's bouncing the light. We actually were able to invent a kind of cool breakthrough that kind of resolves the trade-off. And so what we were able to find out is how to make these micro perforations in our piece of paper, so to speak, the back of our display, such that we do actually have a backlight that by default is off. So it just is like a moving piece of paper. But in the evening or at nighttime, or if you want higher contrast, you can actually start to turn our backlight on. And through those micro perforations, the screen can start to brighten up. It's similar to the warm light on a Kindle, but ours is further redshifted. And the key thing we did is at a hardware level, I think we're the only ones who've done this, is we created a custom multiplex backlight where we have LEDs that have specific phosphors that make them very redshifted. So they include a little bit of 720 nanometer, 680, 620, some of these, you know, healing red infrared frequencies, and totally eliminates blue. And so the base idea there is if you use an iPad in night shift or in red mode, underneath is still white LEDs going through a color filter where it's going through the red square. Those are pretty inefficient. They still allow 20% of the blue light, 10%. It varies. With our thing, at the LED level, with high-efficiency phosphors, we're blocking the blue light. And so what you're getting is like 99% or 99.9% blue light-free. And so on our website, you can kind of see the spectrum difference we measured on an iPad with night shift and our thing. And so the hope here is, even though the company's called Daylight, and one of the cool things is now you can use a computer near a window in the courtyard outside of Starbucks, you know, at a picnic table. One of the greatest applications of this is now when the sun goes down, You can put away your conventional devices and you don't need to wear blue blockers. You can just use this. And it's hard to explain until you see it, but the combination of a reflective display and these kind of like amber LEDs really make it feel different. Best way I can describe it is it feels like you're holding a legal pad beside a campfire. It's got that same kind of warm feel to it.
That sounds epic. And the listeners will have recently heard my episode with Andrew Latour of Gemba Red, and we discussed the whole field of photobiomodulation and the fact that these longer wavelengths of light are actually being used for healing and therapeutic benefit. So to me, it sounds incredible that we've gone from this conventional iPad emitting a whole bunch of blue light in this 480 nanometer range, you know, having all these health effects that we discussed earlier, compared to what you guys are developing, which is not only a computer that you can use, but might even be having like a photobiomodulation beneficial effect on health.
Right. I would say it's still in the early stages. We're only getting a little bit of those highest frequencies, but the way I like to say is we have three goals with light. One, eliminate junk light. Two, spend more time in natural light. And three, have more healing light. And I think we've done a good job at nailing the first two. And I think the goal of the second gen and onwards is to do a better job at the healing light. So there's some pretty interesting research about 1064 nanometers, other long...
non-visible infrared wavelengths.
Yeah, exactly. And then the possibility here is you do Sudoku puzzles on this, and then the whole time you're getting PBM. Wow. And I think that could potentially, especially for children, to be kind of whatever blue light is impacting them, this could potentially reverse. I think that's one of the ways we really can have a lot of impact.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly exciting. And the couple of thoughts that I also have is with regard to this emission. And when people might have used something like Flux or another blue blocking kind of filter on their iPad, Iris, yeah. And how, and if you hold a, if you look at the spectrum using, you know, measuring that, you can see that there's actually still blue peaks. And I think that is a key point for people to understand, is that with artificial light, we can essentially trick our ocular system into perceiving one color, but there's actually peaks in different wavelengths. So how does your daylight computer compare in its spectral emission compared to, say, an iPad on using a night shift
mode? It might be hard for the audience to see, but at least maybe you can read out what you're seeing there. So that's us, and that's an iPad with night shift.
Yeah, so the iPad Pro on night shift still has this typical highly ancestrally inappropriate peak in the blue wavelengths and getting just after a green as well. So compared to the daylight computer, which looks a lot more like an incandescent globe essentially on that spectral pattern. So that is, and there's nothing in that 400 range which would trigger melanopsin. And obviously people who've been following the podcast know that that is the pathway by which the circadian biology is being sabotaged. So that looks fantastic. What about, there's another couple of metrics that we think about when it comes to health harms of devices and light, and that is flicker and non-native EMF. So can maybe both of you talk about those two concepts as it relates to this computer?
Yeah, Tristan can get into it, but what he was talking about PWM versus DC, a synonym for PWM is flicker. So the basic way, what we're saying, we have a screen that bounces light. We have these tiny little holes, so we can actually optionally put a backlight behind it and light it. And we've done it with these zero blue amber LEDs that we custom designed. Now, the question is, how do you light these LEDs? And then how do you change their brightness? So the way you light them is you connect them to electricity. Simple, right? But the way you change your brightness, it turns out the way most modern things change their brightness is they quickly switch them on and off. So if you want something to be super bright, let's say the LED out of the box is rated as X brightness. You just constantly give it electricity and it'll just be that brightness the entire time. It's at its highest brightness. If you give it zero electricity, it'll be completely dark. And so the trick engineers have figured out, because they didn't think about biology, they were just thinking about how do we save cost on LEDs and on driver circuits and things like that, is if you really quickly change it from being on and off, and you change the proportion in 1 second from how often it's on from how often it's off, you can change the brightness. Yeah. So what I mean is if it's like 10 milliseconds off, 2 milliseconds on, 10 milliseconds off, 2 milliseconds on, you do that really fast, it looks like it's 20% brightness, right? And you change that proportion where it's 10 seconds, like whatever it is, you can then get it to go brighter or darker. And that's called flicker, or that's called pulse width modulation, or PWM. And that's how almost all modern electronics work. And so we picked an older technology before PWM was invented that turns out, to Tristan's point, it's really simple, but it is so hard to do something that's against the conventional supply chain. I think this is why there isn't as much innovation as people think there is, because every layer is going to fight you. The driver, controller, maker, the supplier, the engineers, the firmware, the amount of work we have to do for something so simple is enormous. What we do is we drive it with direct current, or DC, where the way you change the brightness is you simply increase the voltage across the LED. And the problem with that is each person's LED is slightly different. So 0.1 volts to somebody else will be this brightness, 0.1 volts to somebody else will be that. But our hope is, through education, we can tell our customers, hey, just, you'll have to figure it out for yourself. What exactly is the brightness? But the power from this is we get to be the first flicker-free computer. So we're flicker-free by default if you don't use the backlight. There's no flicker at all. There's no backlight. It's just bouncing the light. The sun doesn't have flicker. I mean, clearly, if you're inside, that might. But if you're using our backlight, we've completely eliminated that flicker. Do you want to talk about the EMF stuff?
Yeah, I just think it's so powerful. Like, people don't even realize, you know, when you just get tired eyes at the end of the day, you think it's like a blue light problem. You know, it can help with eye strain, but it's multifaceted. So, you know, we're attacking that from all angles, which is, you know, it's just so cool. And having worked in electronics in the semiconductor industry, like, I realized all this, and it's just like, yeah, there's all ICs are switching, all like power converters, all electronics have so much switching going on. And that's, I mean, that is a source of EMFs, of non-native frequencies. I would say from, you know, the typical notion of non-native EMFs, you know, radio frequencies, low frequencies from in the power realm of 50 to 60 hertz, you know, at the hardware level, there's a lot that we want to do. And this is why, you know, I came on board is really excited to, you know, think of ideas. But there's actually so much we can do from the software side of things, even with our Gen 1 tablet. And that's what we're working on now. You know, the Wi-Fi, for example, could just be off by default. You know, smart airplane mode is what we're calling it. And we can implement some software changes to where maybe the Wi-Fi only turns on when you open an internet browser. And if you're just taking notes or like writing things down, like Anjan is right now, and he's holding it like, you know, close to his body, it's just off. And the device itself controls that, because, you know, you could have all the shortcuts, you know, you could have, you know, the user intention, but most people probably aren't as deliberate about their EMFs as, you know, maybe you and I are, Max. So having that baked in from a software perspective can be huge. And then, yeah, like I said, we're thinking about creative ways to lower EMFs from, you know, the electronic side of things. Maybe having, you know, accessories that people can easily hardwire, you know, getting an Ethernet port, like all these things, creating adapters, because I know there's a huge gap in terms of the actual hardware accessories needed to properly have hardwired internet with like a modern device. And then just education around like using devices, right? Like we know that distance is the best mitigation tool for EMF. So we're going to have a lot of educational content on our website, which will be, you know, fully launched here in a couple months. And I think that's massive. So, but we have an opportunity to really study these things and what works, and have engineers not just holding, you know, or having real tools like a spectrum analyzer, like oscilloscopes, looking at the waveforms and understanding what is working from an EMF perspective and what's not, as opposed to, you know, holding like an RF meter, which is pretty hard to make conclusions from. So I think we can really be a leader in this space and set, you know, the example of what can be done when you think about health upstream and engineer technologies with health in mind.
Yeah, man, it's extremely exciting. I want to emphasize a couple points for the listener. And this concept of flicker is inherent in artificial light. And for people to really get their head around it, the sun does not flicker. It is a very, very constant source of light and full spectrum light. So flicker is just one aspect of the harm of these devices. And it's a good opportunity to really break that down for people, because as I see it, there's kind of three facets to the harm of these devices. One is the isolated blue light emission without any kind of infrared or balanced spectrum. Two is the flicker and the fact that it's pulsing, as you guys have described, and that it's been linked to migraine in people. It's been linked to a whole bunch of health effects that people can have improvements when they block blue light or they get out of this flickering light environment. And then the third is the non-native EMF and the fact that this device is also emitting radio frequency emission that has these effects on our mitochondria that Tristan, you and I have talked about in two episodes. I've talked to Dr. Jack Cruz about in two episodes. So those are like the three kind of big attack vectors on human health from these devices. And it sounds like this product is kind of really addressing all of them. The idea of using a software to modulate the emission or the safety of the device is also very interesting because, you know, I use something called OneTap Zap or that enables you to manually turn off like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. But it makes so much sense to me to build that feature into the device. Why kind of have to make people download an extra app? If it's already in the device, then it is by default a much more safer product for a kid to use. And that also reminds me of something that Dr. Jack Cruz has talked about, which is the fact that Steve Jobs knew that the iPad and his tech devices were emitting radio frequency radiation that was harmful, so much so that he built in a motion sensor that was able to potentially turn that off, but it was never activated. So maybe talk to this idea of Silicon Valley or this whole tech behemoth industry, that how have they got so far away from what you guys are doing and looking at health first in terms of engineering devices?
Yeah. I think one of the fun contradictions and superpowers that are Daylight could develop is we're based in San Francisco. We're in the belly of the beast. And the hope is we can harness the powers of the beast, being incredible at software, all aspects of technology. But we're also doing this podcast in El Salvador. I think that's the second dynamic we want to bring, is that kind of spirit of decentralized and alternative and on the frontiers and in the fringe, and that kind of rebel attitude to things. And so I think we fail if we allow one of these to compromise the other. To your point, there's a lot of medical companies doing things, so where it's hard for them to get to the next level is they don't have the software, they don't have the branding, they don't have the whole massive vertical integration that Apple can do. And so I think I'd like to joke with the team that imagine Apple got run over by people like us. You know, they forgot to lock the door one day and we ran in. What would we be able to do with that? And that's how I think about us. It's like, we're like trying to be baby Apple, but for our community and for our values. And I think it's an open question. I don't think anybody's been able to pull this off. There's a lot of risk of being in the belly of the beast. It's really easy to get sucked in. So I think just what's going to be crucial for us is being on the ground with people like yourself, being on the ground with people, always coming back to what are the problems, what matters, and just being disciplined in what are the benefits of this conventional system, of Silicon Valley and of that world. And I think the problem most people have is they read similar books on the weekend. It's just they're terrified to bring this up with their colleagues. You're in the middle of a pitch meeting in Apple and you're like, guys, blue light's bad. And everybody's like, what's your evidence? What's the thing? Show me the studies. Like, where's the like 50, you know, the meta review? And I just think, I don't blame them. It's so hard to be courageous in that environment where if you're right, it takes years and years and years and you don't gain much from it. But if you're wrong, you're fired. So I previously looked at them as villains. Some of that might be true, but more and more now I look at it as like, oh, they're just systematically set up to not be courageous. And we can fail. We can do DC dimming and have all of our engineers yell at us, you know, put a year of extra work to get that to work. And who knows? Just, I don't really care if we fail or succeed. It's just important to me if the world has an attempt at trying to do it the right way and just see where the cards kind of lie.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point that it's like, you know, maybe in the beginning there was some intentionality, you know, flashy lights and picturesque screens. I mean, people want to make like a really aesthetic product, right? And blue light definitely helps with that. I mean, for sure. But it's kind of a byproduct to me of just like fiat money, right? Like there's no incentive for them to really go out of their way to make like a product that's better for their consumer, especially that all the big tech companies have such a monopoly. And, you know, it's just coming in like minor innovations now. Like it's not, they're fiat farming us, and it's just a reality of it. And why should they change? You know, nothing's disrupting them. And, you know, you can think what you want of like Elon Musk, but at least he brings like, he's shaking up like a couple different industries. And then going back to what you said originally and what Anja mentioned, it's like, yeah, there's health tech companies out there, but are they really addressing the root cause of the issues? Do blue light blockers address the root cause? No, they're all band-aid solutions, like red light panels. They're not actually addressing the problem, the elephant in the room. And that's that we're spending an increasing amount of time on our devices every single passing year, every single one of us. I mean, just think of, I don't know, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, how much time you spent on your phone then versus now. It's substantially different. And it's so ubiquitous. And then think about what I'm really passionate about, and you mentioned, we talked about in the beginning, is just the next generation, the children. And that's where we think we can have the biggest impact, is setting them up for success at an early age instead of the opposite, giving them a blue light heavy, EMF heavy, you know, iPad at age two and completely just like causing mitochondrial dysfunction at the earliest age. And then by the time they get to middle school, they're already having, you know, mental illness and so many issues. So I think that's where we can have the biggest impact. And that's kind of how I think about it. But it's a challenge, right? You know, it's such an uphill battle. And that's why Andre said it's taken so long and it takes a lot of investment. It takes longer to do things, and engineers aren't happy when you try and do it the right way, because suppliers, it's a challenge when you do things completely against the grain from all angles, really.
And I kind of think cowardice is pretty much a sin. But having said that, I think a lot of these problems are structural, not because people are evil. I got to meet the person who invented the VA LCD, one of the most popular types of LCD. And I asked him, like, these things are not so great, man. Like, how do you feel? And he just looked at me and he was like, if I knew my grandson would be spending 10 hours a day on this thing, I would have never designed it the way I did. He's like, none of us had any clue that people are going to use computers so much and young people are going to use them so much. He's like, none of us in our wildest dreams would have thought that. These things were for technicians and nerds and business executives who use it for a couple hours a day. And so I think they're just on an old value system, on an old knowledge base, on an old ideology. And now the new information, the new wisdom, the new knowledge is coming, and there's no adults in the room. They're all like, we're public market companies. So we can't start telling people that our stuff is bad. Because if we start making healthier computers, they're going to be like, wait, is your existing stuff not healthy? So they're stuck, yeah. Right? And there's just cowards. Like, you look at somebody like Elon Musk, for all of his whatever, at least he's courageous. He's willing to try things. And I just think a lot of these companies don't really have founders running the place anymore. So it's hard to be courageous. And so I think Hannah Arendt has a quote, the banality of evil. There's a huge banality to the evil that's coming out of big tech.
Yeah, man. It's the reference to Elon Musk is an interesting one. And for anyone who's read his biography, which was Ashley Vance maybe 10 years ago now, it gets an insight into this concept of first principles thinking. And he essentially attacked the problem of rocketry from a complete first principles approach. So if I'd never designed a rocket, how would I do it? And I think that is the same line of reasoning that we need in health and tech. And that is how I approach this problem of health optimization, and not reasoning by analogy of what maybe centralized medicine has done before me. But when, how that applies to what you guys are doing is, if you put health as the first and most highest goal, then the designs that you've developed make complete sense. And all the designs come as a flow on of putting this first principle thinking of putting human health first. And clearly what Apple and all these other Samsung and tech companies are doing is not even thinking about the human biological effects. And, you know, Tristan, we've talked about the fact that engineers don't have a biological background. So the absence of this multidisciplinary thinking is to the detriment of simple people, of the 2-year-old kid flicking on the iPad, because the tech guy who does designed it had no idea that that blue light is destroying that kid's melanopsin, is depleting his DHA, is setting him up for Parkinson's disease at the age of 45. So I think that what we've come to now by what you guys are doing, by blending these disciplines of biology, human health optimization with technology, is amazing, because you're essentially able to design a product that is allowing us to harness the benefits of technology without the detrimental health effects.
And what comes to mind here is also the risk and reward of working from principles, mm-hmm. as you're saying, first principles, is you get a lot of two birds with one stone if you get lucky. Like, what's an example of this? You can use this outside. What's the main possibility of that? You can establish natural circadian rhythms. You can get full spectrum sunlight. But here's another possibility. You can have your feet in the ground. And so now whatever EMFs are being produced by this, you can ground it. We never kind of really thought that through. That's just like a cool thing that came out from this principle of get back into nature. Here's another thing. We really wanted the stylus to not have any electronics in it. So you're not touching something that is got a Bluetooth chip or a battery in it or some sort of receiver. It never occurred to me, for electrosensitive people, now they have a way to use technology without having to touch the capacitive touch screen, because this is passive. There's no battery. There's no charging. Once again, just we went with the principle of if you can do something in analog, do something in analog, right? Only go to digital if you have to. And so I think the hope is by working backwards from principles, we can get lucky. And there's been a couple examples so far.
Yeah, amazing. And I guess maybe we've talked about this along the way, but why has big tech not kind of come up with this idea before? And maybe it is this fiat economy that you've talked about, and maybe it is the absence of this multidisciplinary thinking. You know, why did Steve Jobs not himself come up with a product similar to this?
Maybe it's a bit campy, but one thing we think about is if Steve Jobs reincarnated and he made a computer for his kids, what would it look like? He's famous for not allowing his kids to have iPhones or iPads until they were 16. I think there's something really screwed up with selling stuff to everybody else's kids and not allowing it for his own kids. So I think one, once again, is by the time they realized it's bad for people, they were stuck and trapped and their stock price is dependent on ever increasing growth. And rather than do the courageous thing and tank their stock or do whatever, I think they just kind of go with the status quo. Yeah. And so I think a lot of this comes back to courage and taking the small stuff seriously. I think it's easy to dissociate and be like, oh, I'm stressed. Oh, I have a horrible sleep, but I just need to keep working and working and working. And I just couldn't do that. I'm like, dude, I'm miserable. My eyes hurt. My sleep is screwed up. I just can't do this anymore. I don't care if I'm successful. I don't care if things come my way. It's just not worth it. So I think there's a certain like embodiment of where you're starting to respect yourself and respect your body. And I think modern society only respects achievements and numbers, and not the simple things.
Yeah, I mean, there's such incredible power in following our passions and following our truth, whether or not that is supported by society and the kind of status quo. So it's admirable that you guys are following that and kind of building that out. And it's very, very interesting to follow. So to talk about the potential market and talk about the maybe vision you guys have, because, you know, the Apple Pro VR headset has just been released, and for anyone who's in the health space and aware of circadian biology and the non-visual photoreceptor system, this is like I think I tweeted once that it might be the quickest way of inducing neurodegeneration ever invented. So what is your vision for daylight computing and perhaps replacing not only the iPad but other devices with this technology?
Yeah, I'll give it back to Anjan in a second, but I just wanted to say, I just thought about this, and it's like, you know, if Apple didn't succeed, the internet didn't succeed, like, we actually, none of us would probably know anything about how artificial light is harmful for our biology, right? So to me, it's almost like a natural progression. It's like you kind of have to, you know, you make mistakes, right? Like, people make mistakes. That happens at a societal level as well. And then it just becomes so entrenched, I think, because of, you know, the failing monetary system that we're entrenched in. But now we have this opportunity because of the internet, because of the ability to connect online. Now we can go back and see, oh, like John Ott was onto something in the 70s. Robert O. Becker was also onto something. Now let's bring that work back and give it a platform, have this, you know, extremely powerful, you know, connection and multi disciplines, and then put that energy into a product like Daylight and the tablet for the first product. And I think that's a humble way to think about it, because at the individual level, I don't think, you know, specific, most people are not evil. And a lot of people are probably, like Anj said, really proud of what they invented, and it was really cool, but it's almost like there has to be some progression. But now it's like, how do we make sure that the healthier alternative catches on? And that kind of gets into, you know, how do we market this? And I mean, I think in the past few years since COVID, it's really been a turning point, right? For everyone. People are more skeptical. Well, even before COVID, there's like, you know, the data farming. People don't like big tech. They don't like Apple. I mean, Apple might be like 10% better than Google and Facebook. They really hate Zuckerberg. And, you know, that's an advantage of people have increasing distrust in big tech. And then they also have increasing awareness of health being a priority, and the information they're receiving on a daily basis from the governing bodies, from whoever, what we are taught in school is false or misleading or not the full picture. And, you know, that's the momentum that we're trying to tap into. And I mean, just, you know, you and I know, just the podcasting space, like on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, it's proliferating. There's more and more people. And, you know, it started with diet and exercise, like carnivore and all these things, seed oils. But then that light story is becoming more and more heard. You know, people like Huberman are helpful. They have big platforms. But we really want to tap into that. And we want to be the people who take that to a next level and then be like, here you go. Here's something that now solves a major portion of that issue in a modern lifestyle. Because like I always said about EMFs, like, we're not going backwards in technological evolution. We just need to think inwards instead of having, you know, technology that's just so outwards facing.
Damn.
Yeah, no, a very, very interesting perspective. And yeah, so talk where you guys going to want to take this. Explain to me where the vision, please.
Yeah. I think you could say there's two main ways to look at our project. One is a middle finger to technology. Fuck you, technology. Fuck you for distracting my son. Fuck you for hurting my eyes. Fuck you for messing my sleep. Fuck you for not respecting my sovereignty. I think that's a very legitimate way to think about our thing. I think there's actually an equally valid, if not sounding contradictory, perspective, which is this is a love letter to technology. Daylight at its core is a love letter to technology, because we're saying, don't throw it out. Don't burn it at the stake. Don't demonize it. There's a certain conception of it that we've all been told is the only way technology can be. And that conception, sure, you can burn at the stake. But what we're doing is saying, no, technology can actually be something that's humbler, more beautiful, more respectful, more caring, actually play a part as part of your healing rather than your degradation. And I think that's what we're trying to say is, we don't need to throw this out. We don't need to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's take the criticisms. Let's take the wisdom. But let's show how technology can be humane, how it can fit in. And I think that's our vision is, if Apple was founded today, Steve Jobs came back with a consciousness, and he wanted Apple to be a public benefit corporation that cared about health and wellness and healthy social relationships and the health of our planet and everything in between, what would they do differently? That same skill set of being able to go from color theory and community and design to deep, deep supply chain innovation and all the software in between. What if you take that same skill set of vertical integration, which I think matters to create really good experiences? And at the end of the day, that's what we are as a company, is to create great experiences. What's possible if we go through each category of computing and rethink it with this value set? What's a distraction-free phone look like? What does a minimalist typewriter or laptop thing look like? What does a monitor look like? What does a watch, you know, look like? And I think our hope is there's something interesting at the end of each of those rainbows. And I'd say that's like category one of our vision. And category two of our vision is, what's a more healthier, humane, more embodied future to computing that isn't VR? you can't tell me that the rest of my life, as you're saying, I'm gonna stick something on my face and call that my reality and screw up my brain. Like, come on, guys. This is just because Mark Zuckerberg wants this to be the future because he doesn't want Apple to dominate them, right? Like, and the rest of us are having to pay the price for it. So I think the possibility from what we've invented is a second trajectory to computing, which is VR, our iPhones. I call them portals. They're like little shining beacons that pull you into a world. If you look at what we've made, it's boring. Why is it boring? Because it doesn't pull you into the world. It's part of your world. It's literally using the same light, the same saturation, the same hue, the same intensity of everything else in your environment. So the way I think about it is it's less a portal and it's more an object. It's in the same category as a kitchen knife or a key to a door or a really good book. And so what's the possibility of being able to take computers and instead of putting it on your face, throwing it into the environment? Imagine like a whiteboard that just looks like a piece of paper, but it's a magical whiteboard because it's got our screen technology and operating system. So when you get in front of it in the morning, it switches to your workout. And because it can animate, it shows you the different postures to do it. You go to your bathroom and you got a calendar on the wall that tells you your to-do list for the day, so on and so on. That's spatial computing. It's part of your environment, but it's done in a humane way. There's a lot of problems to solve in doing that. But I think that's category two of the way we think it is there's a more grounded, humane, embodied future to computing that we think we can play a role in.
Yeah, it's epic. And I really think it gets to this double-edged sword of technology. And it's destroying our biology if it's blue lit and in the way that it's currently implemented. But the value that it's provided to society, to personal interactions, to advancement of the human race is enormous. And you know, Cruise is famous for describing blue light as this asteroid that is kind of going to potentially take us out. And what you guys are developing in this vision that you've just painted for us, to me, really provides an antidote or an alternative path, a fork in the road, where we can harness the benefits of interconnectedness, of this amazing repository of online information to make our lives better and become more intelligent and more efficient, more productive, without having that detrimental effect on our biology. So that's a fantastic kind of maybe place to end it, and it's a great exposition of what you guys are doing. So maybe share with us where people can find this product, where can they follow your work, where can they learn more, where can they buy one of these Daylight tablets.
So if you go to daylightcomputer.com, that's singular, not Daylight Computers, daylightcomputer.com, you can find out more and buy the product. And you can follow us on Twitter at Daylight Co, on other socials as well. And we're just coming out into the world. So you guys are some of the earliest folks who are finding out about us. But we're going to launch in May. And so we're hoping to start organically on the ground with the people we're most aligned with before we go out into the world. And then who knows who's going to buy this and who's going to be part of this. So our hope is to build community, be humble, listen, learn, be aligned with the folks who most care about this.
Yeah. Amazing. Great. Well, Anjan, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation, and I'll include all that information in the show notes. So yeah, great. And we'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, Max.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Regenerative Health Podcast. I hope this episode helped you better understand some aspect of improving your lifestyle for optimal health. If you enjoyed this episode, then share it out with friends and family. Leaving a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify podcasts also helps spread the message. Thank you, and see you next time.